Park's Weekly Review, Current Technology Analysis, show number 29, April 8th and 9th, 2006, wvtexan.podomatic.com. This week's intro music is available on the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. The artist is CJ Chenier. The track, Turn Around and Say Goodbye. In this week's show, we look at the changeable web and evidence. The buzz is boot camp, Windows on an Apple, a legal case involving a definition of the internet as interstate commerce, and for the Because You Can site, album covers. A quick production note. This podcast appears to be outgrowing the OurMedia.org infrastructure. Many listeners have mentioned that the feed from that site is sluggish at times and that response time from the server is hit and miss on a good day. In an effort to improve the delivery, I'm moving the principal feed to a new service through Podomatic. You can find the feed in the show notes or visit the new site directly at wvtexan.podomatic.com to listen to the show online. Archived episodes will remain at ourmedia.org to preserve server space and bandwidth as necessary. It's my hope that this change will accommodate growing listenership, finally, and provide everyone with more reliable access to the show week by week. Let me know if you have any problems accessing the new site. And now on to the show. The Changeable Web and Evidence. For the next few weeks, this segment of the podcast will take a concerted look at evidence on the changeable web. At the risk of sounding trite, the internet is fertile ground for computer crime, with its global reach, impersonal victimization, largely unaware and uninformed user base, and relative ease of use. In each stage of increased consumer computerization, criminal schemes have found holes in virtual armor. There's an adage of sorts in the cybersecurity world that criminal use of technology invariably outpaces both law enforcement and legislative understanding and ability to combat those who wish to do harm to others financially, emotionally, or otherwise. So for the next few weeks, we'll take a look at the elements of the changeable web from an evidentiary perspective. What schemes and scams are facilitated by a configurable read-write web interface? And what might we look for to, one, prevent or minimize exposure in this environment, and two, assemble evidence to substantiate claims of criminal activity for prosecution? These are not simple questions, obviously, and do not present simple answers. In an attempt to approach the issues, however, we'll look at the difficulties of criminal investigation in an always online user experience, and some specific projects aimed at making law enforcement's job more straightforward. The elements of the online experience that cause particular difficulty for collecting evidence of criminal activity include anonymity, traceability, pseudonymity, flesh-and-blood user-to-user ID linking within the realm of identity, distributed processing, jurisdiction, ownership of resources, access restrictions, hijacking, phishing, and farming, just to name a few. Plenty of fodder for this short segment, anyway. We'll look in the coming few weeks first, at what these concepts mean, and second, how they apply to the technology of the changeable web. It goes well beyond IP addresses, disk imaging, and file system date stamps of much of today's digital evidence collection to reach into complex, situational, and one might even say exotic, constructs to link physical actors to online acts. How does one collect evidence from a mashup user, for example? Who owns the data? Who gets subpoenaed? From where should evidentiary data be collected? Server? Clients? In transmission? And what circumstances provide probable cause, reasonable doubt, and so on? So for the next few weeks, we'll look at just these elements. The changeable web segment will be investigation on the read-write web, or Digital Forensics 2.0. See the show notes for some introductory links to articles on anonymity, online traceability, and the Levels of Anonymity and Traceability Project, LAVANT, from the Computer Emergency Response Team Coordination Center in the U.S. The buzz is Windows on an Apple. This past week, Apple caused a stir with the announcement of Boot Camp, a little piece of software that enables users to install Microsoft Windows on a Macintosh that uses an Intel processor. Many of those writing on the subject have let out a collective sigh of disappointment at the announcement, hoping for something much more earth-shattering on Apple's 30th birthday. But others, me included, have raised an intrigued eyebrow at what this product may mean for increased competition in the operating system and hardware markets, and possibly for the maturation and market acceptance of Linux on the consumer desktop. Truth be told, I think that most consumers buy computer hardware and software with much more straightforward motives than I. The market seems driven by a great deal of sex appeal and bells and whistles. I like a bell and whistle or two, but tend to be attracted much more by price for performance measures. And I'm not a big gamer. So what might this announcement mean to the wider, more normal computer buying public? Also, what might be the implications for Microsoft, hardware manufacturers, and software developers? Initial reviews are mixed. In the cold light of day, Apple has something under 8% of the U.S. consumer space, and their hardware is significantly higher priced than your average Dell box for home use. Apple has no competition on aesthetic design at present, so that market can be locked up. The real implication here, though, has much less to do with any one company gaining or losing market share or delivering beautiful hardware and elegant software to consumers. The big news is the open approach Apple is promoting with this announcement. Apple is offering endpoint consumers the opportunity to, wait for it, choose their operating environment, combination of environment, etc. With all this show's emphasis on configurability in the user space on the internet, perhaps this is a sign that a similar tide is turning in the component market. Apple is opening the user space, not intruding into it, not locking it up, not forcing a switch, upgrade, or otherwise. A more open approach to consumers that allows, but not forces, choice for final configuration is an exciting development. See the show notes for links to several articles discussing the Apple announcement. The legal case is U.S. v. McEwen. This week's legal case, an appeal from the U.S. 3rd District Court of Appeals, published April 6, 2006, provides precedential analysis and finding use of the Internet as necessarily interstate commerce with regard to federal law. The case poses the question in the context of a child pornography prosecution, but the 34-page published opinion of the court goes well beyond discussing the emotionally charged crime. In the final holding, the court states, quote, that the Internet is both a channel and instrumentality of interstate commerce, and that Congress can regulate the downloading of child pornography over the Internet, even if the transmission never crossed state lines. Moreover, because the defendant admitted that he had downloaded images from the Internet, sufficient evidence existed for a trier of fact to find that interstate commerce jurisdictional element met beyond a reasonable doubt. Close quote. This interpretation of the Internet as an interstate medium is not necessarily novel, but the logic of the court in this case is impeccable, pulling together cogent analysis from the defendant's Internet service provider's infrastructure and adding that while in technology terms, a single transmission cannot be guaranteed to have traveled within a state or among states, the very nature of the Internet is such that it is a key component of interstate commerce, and as such, crimes committed thereon are under federal jurisdiction where applicable. One possible interpretation of this finding, however, reaches beyond prosecutions of child pornography distribution into other elements of jurisdiction on the Internet. For example, if courts continue to define the Internet as an interstate medium, state sales tax plans may face difficult challenges in federal court. The continued definition of the Internet as an interstate medium for the purposes of criminal prosecution may also make state prosecution difficult in light of loosely worded statutes in many jurisdictions. With that said, though, this case, marked as precedential by the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, adds substantial backing to previously argued interstate commerce claims regarding the Internet, and will provide a clear platform from which to launch future criminal prosecutions. See the show notes for a link to the published opinion of the court. Because You Can Cite this week is album covers. Well, by now you may have received the email slideshow of worst album covers ever. Forget the PPS file and go straight to the source, sort of. 38 pages of some of the oddest and most grotesque album art ever conceived. For some strange reason, it seems that spiritual acts have a knack for creating really creepy album art. I guess in those cases, it's the music that matters after all. Especially with Father Robert White, the Reverend in Rhythm, or Butch Yelton in Upbound with Swing That Gospel Axe. I don't even really know where to begin. So see it yourself with the link in the show notes, or do a quick Google search for worst album art. Well, that's all for this week. Check back next week for another review. And remember, all the show notes are available at www.protopage.com/weeklyreview. And if you get a minute, leave a comment on the posting site. It will be nice to hear from you. We'll go out now with CJ Chenier from PodSafe Music Network with Turn Around and Say Goodbye.